This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the latest reaction show. This is William, and today I'm joined by my buddies Dylan Hells and Johnny P, and we're going to review WWE's Beast in the East Network special from Japan. And Johnny, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, nothing. Just pacing around as usual.
All right.
Was that the Bret Hart thing, pacing the cage? You remember that soft spot in your heart for wrestling with Shatter soundtracking?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, but nobody gives a fuck. Why don't you just move on then, Ron? Fine.
great start. And Dylan, my man, what's going on?
Not much. This is my third straight day with a audio contribution. So, and it'll be going on four if we do that the reaction show for New Japan tomorrow. So,
oh, we're gonna do it. We're gonna.
Oh, you know we are.
Trucking along.
All right. Well, let's start with this show. This is a unique show because it's almost like a house show, but it's in Japan, and two, it's more focused, I would say, than a house show in the sense that, you know, you get a sense that they were pulling out all the stops more here on this show than maybe a typical house show. But we can talk about that as we're going along. But the first match was Chris Jericho versus Neville. And I guess we missed a couple of other matches that Meltzer had reported. I guess Cesaro wrestled a singles match, or supposed to, right? You're supposed to wrestle Diego. That wasn't on the network. And we were supposed to see the Luchadors. What are they called?
Lucha Dragons versus New Day.
And they didn't show that on the network. I was bummed out. Didn't get to see New Day in their tag match. But
yeah, I was pissed. Honestly, I hope somebody periscoped those or illegally recorded them from the second tier, because as we'll see as we get through the show, I would almost bet money I would like both those matches better than anything that aired on this broadcast.
That is so nuts to hear.
I'm not a shameless Balor mark. So.
I'm not either, but we'll talk about it.
Got to get away from the Meltzer. He's too infatuated with Conor McGregor these days. I was waiting for him to report. It had been reported elsewhere. Look, they only have a 2-hour window on, last week, there were certain outlets reporting, they only have a 2-hour window on the, whatchamacallit, they're probably going to start, they're only going to do 4 to 5 matches depending on length.
Well, I actually figured that they would not do the whole show. I didn't see that, but I was pretty sure they wouldn't do the whole show. But I think some of we'll get into it. But I think some of the way the show was set up and laid out could have been changed, and they could have squeezed at least one more of those matches on the show relatively easily.
Yeah, maybe. And let's talk about this first. Opening match, Chris Jericho versus Adrian Neville. Well, just Neville now. I keep wanting to call him Adrian. I don't care. Dylan, what'd you think of the opener?
It was all right. I mean, it was perfectly fine. You know, the match was Jericho's really was probably maybe the most over person on the show, at least up until the back end of the Balor-Owens match. Which wasn't really surprising because, I mean, it is a special deal to be able to see him. Of course, Michael Cole informed us about his lengthy career in FMW, which, of course, he's well known for. The long time he spent there as a Frontier Martial Arts competitor. I thought it was a decent enough to maybe goodish match. And was kind of amazed, because I watched the show unspoiled. I didn't watch it live. I wanted to watch it live, but my internet went out at 4 a.m., and I just called it and said, screw it, I'll watch it in the morning. I was a little surprised after I sort of went around to some of the message boards and Twitter and some other places to see how much people liked this match, because I just thought it was decent enough. I guess the bar is really low for a wrestler as bad as Jericho at this point. Like, if he shows up and, you know, properly executes more than one or two things, it's considered like an excellent performance from him. So, it was fine. Neville losing clean I thought was really stupid. I can sort of see why they would do it, because Jericho, in theory, is this big star in Japan, and the reaction he got. But, you know, it bothers me. Well, I'll get to why it bothers me when we get to a later match, actually. But the match itself I thought was okay. I think they did some decent stuff in it. Down the stretch, you know, back and forth, near fall type stuff was fairly well done. You know, I still think Jericho looks awkward when he's in there trying to wrestle a juniorish match. I think he's always looked awkward when he's in there trying to do those kind of matches because of his body type and the way he moves around. But there was some cool stuff. I thought the Lion Salt was a cool little spot that maybe people weren't surprising. I thought Neville bumped really well for a lot of the Jericho offense.
Dylan, is that your AC in the background?
Yeah, I can cut it.
Sorry to interrupt you, but
it's okay.
It sounded like a weird sound effect from a space movie for a little bit,
which is odd because I didn't move a square inch. Well, whatever. But the finish itself was, a good finish. In terms of how it looked, I thought it looked good and it was fitting, especially because Neville had escaped the lion tamer, high angle Boston crab, whatever the fuck you want to call the move, earlier in the match, and then had eventually fell to it. So I kind of like the psychology of that, but I don't think Jericho, I don't think he moves around that well in the ring. I think he's kind of an awkward, sloppy-ish guy. He's just not a dynamic guy to watch, which is not an indictment if you're good at other stuff, but I don't feel like he's all that good at anything else. So while he brought heat to the match, which was good because he's over, and I don't think he brought a whole lot else to the match. And, you know, the match, in my opinion, was just way too long. I think they could have shaved 5 minutes off of this, and the match would have been 10 times better. But I suppose the idea was, since we're senselessly having Neville lose to a shitty reality show host, we ought to at least let him lose in a long match.
What do you think, Johnny?
Well, first of all, I wanted to defend Chris Jericho. I think that he pulls off the gimmick of being a middle-aged, closeted gay gentleman who is obsessed with hair metal really well. I think that they're just selling him short, though. No, okay, first, I just want to rewind just for 1 second, just because as far as overall presentation stuff, it actually looks pretty nice. I know they don't care, because no matter what I say, I can just be disqualified by being, he's, you know, somebody who actually looks on the internet or owns, you know, footage that's from more than 10 years ago. I really do wish, though, that they'd offer an audio feed that's just the arena without announcers. Because I always thought, well, Michael Cole would be the most unbearable announcer until they brought in this new guy to make Michael Cole look good. Because what's his name? Is it Brandon Saxton?
Byron Saxton.
Byron. Okay. He is so plastic and not a human being, which is something that they seem to really love. It seems like a Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon, Petri dish special. Make your own joke. He's unbearable, and they're really uncomfortable. They just say things, they use words and hyperbole that don't even fit the setting. At one point that they talked about later on, they talk about, will Finn Balor pull off a miracle? And I'm like, it's not really a miracle if he wins or not. It's not your story. You were like, what's the most hyperbolic thing I can yell in a phony way at that moment? And that happens over and over again. So that drives me crazy. And the other thing that I did notice is how they've trained these fan bases. And we talk about this from time to time with American audience, but it's shocking to me to see Japanese audiences that are like, I imagine every one of the people in that building uses the phrase WWE Universe to describe who they were sitting around when they were in that building. Those people, because I don't believe for a second that every one of them uses English as a second language. So they're chanting, this is awesome at parts, not because they understand English and that they felt that at that moment, but that's because what they've seen on TV. And obviously, that's, you know, conjecture on my part. I didn't, you know, do some sociological study. But I was really shocked by the fan base reacted in certain ways, which is good. It's good for television, but it was very unlike what we're used to seeing in Japan the last 30 years, and also modern. Like, if you watch a New Japan show, they react a little bit more traditionally as a Japanese audience would. It's not necessarily, I'm not saying it's even a bad thing, but I was just surprised at the chant and the parodying of Cena.
Yeah,
stuff.
But hold on, I'm going to defend the fans. It's not like...
I'm not even knocking them, I'm making an observation, but go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say because, yeah, you're right, they didn't act like normal Japanese fans, but they were dressed up. Like, the most noticeable was the guy who, like, dressed up like Kevin Owens right there in the second.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is they're very Americanized WWE fans. Like, I don't even know that these people can tell you a roster of New Japan wrestlers.
Well, but also, maybe not. I don't know. But if you look at, like, the way they all have their cameras out. Right? Like, everybody had a freaking camera. You know, they don't get to see these guys like we do. Like, you know, I live in San Antonio.
Definitely.
Guaranteed, man, they're going to come here, you know, one or two times a year, two or three times a year. I don't need to get my camera out every time they show up to the thing. For them, this is such a unique occasion that, you know, WWE pops into town. I think that they wanted to embrace everything that they see, you know, from the shows.
As they should. They should have fun. My only, it's not even a critique. My only, like, comment on it, really, if you boil it down, is just WWE has really succeeded in making themselves their own entity aside from being a pro wrestling fan.
They are a
WWE fan. You know, internationally now. Now it's kind of confirmed to me. And it's probably been true for a while, but we don't see house shows from Europe and Japan under a WWE brand. You know, so this was an interesting little thing for me to watch.
Yeah, I actually thought it added to the show myself.
You know, you're right. You are right. As far as the match goes, I liked it. I know people get weird about star ratings at times. It's just a tracking system for recommendations, and I'd go on the low end, I'd go 3 1/4, and if you really wanted to really say you loved it, you could go 3 3/4, I guess. Which is to say, it was an above average match, and I'm not the biggest Jericho fan. Dylan said it in a very general way, but he's always moved, for me, in a very practiced, unathletic way. He's both athletic and not, if that makes any sense. He looks like he's getting to spots and doing movements as perfectly trained when he executes things rather than them just feeling in the moment. And I've kind of always felt that about him. And now he's physically older, so it's more pronounced. But I thought the flow, the peaks and valleys were perfect. Like, the fans were brought up and down. I thought, and this is crazy for me to say because I've never been a massive Jericho fan, but I thought he did a great job of being a ring general and plotting out that match. In a real smart way. Like, I'm assuming he kind of called it in the ring with whatever they had worked out, you know, the big stuff earlier on. I thought that the teasing of that was, is it the Red Arrow? Is that the name of his, Neville?
Yeah, that flippy, floppy splash, yeah.
Yeah, the teases of that were really good and really smart. I just thought it flowed really well. It wasn't like a match of the year, and it wasn't supposed to be. It was supposed to be a good opener, and it fulfilled that for me. I thought both guys, and I thought Neville's selling was good, and I thought when he did have to perform bigger spots, like, he really rose to that occasion. And I like that they acknowledged Dragon Gate. And I don't know if they specifically said where Jericho had worked before, but during the night, I know later on.
They said it wrong.
Well, what did they say? Because I didn't catch it, and I didn't want to rewind it.
Cole basically said that Jericho had an extensive career in FMW.
He did work FMW, but
he did. But that's not his claim to fame in Japan at all. Like, well,
no, no.
Yeah.
Would we put War in front of that? Or we put New Japan and War?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but either way.
But yeah, that's. I'm just shocked. I'm more proud of them for acknowledging these things, because it isn't like they were the broadcast crew for Japan, you know. So
that's
an interesting little thing. Because later on they do acknowledge New Japan during the Battle Match as well. But, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I'm probably closer to you, Johnny. I am a Jericho fan. I always have been, man. But I have not liked his last two runs. When he was doing that run with Fandango, I thought that was horrible. And I didn't like his last run with Bray Wyatt. I thought that was really bad. It was pretty sad when the only good match he had on his return was with Randy Orton. And who wants to see Randy Orton against Chris Jericho in a modern setting? But whatever. The point is, I thought that this was the right match to open the show with. I was shocked. I thought this would be closer to the middle of the show, but opening with Jericho, man, he really was over. And I'm going to agree with Johnny, man. As a ring general, man, I really liked the vibe early on, because if you noticed early on, Neville couldn't really ever gain control, man. It was like Jericho was the old dog outsmarting the young dog. You know,
he brought it up and he brought it down accordingly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, he would give Neville enough to where you thought Neville might, you know, start hitting some of his big spots. But Jericho always cut him off, you know, and is like, hey, man, I may be old, but I'm still smarter than you. You know, you still got a few things to learn. And then they built it up to like you said, playing off the early walls of Jericho spot. Then Jericho actually went in with the walls. I agree with you, Dylan. I think Neville should have won this match.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, that crowd was really into Jericho, and, you know, it for the crowd that saw Jericho, I think they were happy Jericho won. Plus, it's not like Neville has been a guy that they've protected at all on WWE TV. As far as I'm concerned, the guy is S.D. Jones on the pecking order. You know?
To me, my problem is, you know, I'm just sick of the idea that if somebody leaves the company and comes back, they're a messianic Christ-like figure who's innately superior to everybody in the roster.
You're absolutely right about
like,
that.
And I have no truck for it anymore, to use a Britishism. I have a complete zero tolerance policy for that from here on out, because it's so pronounced, and they even do it on shows where there's really no benefit to it. And I think this is a perfect example of a show where there was no benefit to it. I mean, if the argument is, and I agree that I'm sure that what the internal argument was, is that Jericho's the bigger star and he's going to get the bigger reaction and the bigger pop if he wins. I completely agree that that's probably what the internal logic behind the decision was. But, and maybe even the fact that he's on television every week with them now with Tough Enough. But to me, this is a show that is a network exclusive. This isn't even on your regular TV show. Like, this isn't something that is on Raw. It's not even on SmackDown. This is something that is solely on the network that's airing at 5:30 a.m. in the morning on the 4th of July. If there was ever a time when there was really no real reason not to let the non-established guy beat the established guy, this would be the time.
I agree with you. I agree. I agree that the wrong guy went over. However, like, Neville's not a guy that I'm invested in anyway. You know?
Well, and he's never going to
be. Well, you're never
going
to be if they don't do things like this. I'm offered this. That's the biggest problem I had.
Johnny, treated as a jobber for the last 3 months anyway. You know what I mean? We cheer for these guys, but
well, I mean,
he hasn't been pushed.
I've got a bigger point. I actually, you know what? That's true and it's false at the same time. Like, on the one hand, he's not been pushed. On the other hand, John Cena needed outside interference to be saved from losing to him live on Raw in a 25-minute match. He's one of these guys where they've done the stop start. He's not like Wade Barrett, where he's lost every match he's been in.
No, he's a 50-50 guy. He's not a jobber.
Yeah, but the point, I actually am going to hold off going too deep into this because I'm going to come back around to this point when we talk about a match later on the show. All I do want to say is that Jericho moves around like he's in quicksand. I do agree that the pacing of the match was pretty well done. By no means am I saying the match was bad, but for matches involving like your veterans versus your upstarts, and your semi-retired veterans versus your upstarts. I watched an independent match last night between two guys that are nowhere near as polished as either one of these dudes, and thought it was easily better. So,
I mean, but we're not watching that show, Dylan. I'm not saying it was.
No,
wasn't better. I'm just saying we're not.
And,
I thought this guy's
and
did a great
job. Gigantic Jericho Mark. So I mean, like that's.
I'm not a huge Jericho Mark. I just said I hated his last two runs. Did I or did I not just tell you I hated his last
I was not excited
to see him in the ring.
You absolutely did, but you're also a humongous superstar. You know,
this was a hot opener that made the crowd excited and accomplished that, and it was a good match, which Johnny agreed with me about. Because something is going on at the phone.
Yeah, I have no clue what's going on.
You hear Johnny's phone, right? Like,
yeah,
it sounds like
he's beatboxing. I have no clue what's going on.
I'm sorry, I can't even hear that. I don't know how to mute it. I had to get a text message out. I apologize, guys.
It's like two parents fighting and he can't handle it, so he just like puts his thumbs in his ears and starts screaming. Here's the deal. Jericho is always going to be a star to one degree or another with a certain segment of the fan base, and it is absolutely fair to say that you didn't watch the match I watched last night, but I have to judge things by the type of matches that they are. I'm not going to pretend that this match exists in the vacuum as the only match in the history of wrestling and judge it by that standard. I'm going to judge it by the standard of matches of that type, and I thought it was an okay match of that type that would probably have been seen as not quite as good as a lot of people probably thought it was if it wasn't on a special show from Japan and it didn't have a unique feel to it because of that vibe. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with preferring a match because of the overall setting in which the match takes place, but if I watch that match with audio off, I'm not even sure I think it's a good match. So.
Oh, I think you're nuts about that. I think, like I said, there's something to be said for cutting the guy off early on, for, you know, showing that you're a smarter, older wrestler, that you're better. We've seen it, you know, for 50 years, the older wrestler outsmarting the younger wrestler. It's a common theme in wrestling. And then letting the young guy, who's more athletic, you know, get his big hope spots in, and then the veteran cuts him off and wins in the end. So to me, the theme itself, if you don't like the match, it's cool. You have an inherent hate for Jericho, and that's cool. So you say, I'm a big Jericho mark. I say, well, you're not going to give Jericho the benefit of the doubt the minute he comes on the screen. Like, we
can
go, but that's what I'm saying. We can go back and forth on that.
He's serviceable. I mean, he's not a terrible wrestler by any stretch.
You
he's
know.
Not Triple H.
Because I know Johnny. Well, I guess Johnny could be on the show longer than we anticipated, but I don't want to like make this Jericho show. For my money, so far we're one for one. I'm happy.
Would have been the fifth best match on Raw last week. So
okay. Yeah, I don't watch Raw anymore. I gave up on that.
I kind of stopped lately too.
Yeah, that next match: Nikki Bella versus Paige versus Tamina for the Divas title. Originally, Naomi was supposed to be in this match. And I'm just going to say it, man. Originally, I was thinking, man, Tamina, I can't stand her. But you know what? I'm with you, Dylan. I don't like these three-way matches. But for the Divas, I actually thought this was pretty fun as a three-way match because no Diva was in there long enough to really stink it up. And they did some cool shit in between. What'd you take away from this match, Johnny?
It was perfectly fine. Honestly, like, I feel bad that the Divas have had so many missteps. And I also feel bad for myself that now I'm speaking in WWE speak because it's just, you just fold after a while, you submit. So, like, I don't know why on earth, if I think about it, I'm calling them Divas, but neither here nor there, branding being what it is. They're just so screwed. I mean, this was a perfectly fine match. It wasn't amazing. I feel bad for Paige. Like, I almost wish I'll wear it publicly on my sleeve. I'm a big Paige mark, and I think there's a lot more they could have done with her.
Lack of body pigment?
I don't care about that. I did not. Not very massively superficial about my wrestling, and I think it's good that she looks different. She's a European woman. It's an interesting look, you know. I don't know. I don't need her to be Nikki Bella. I see a million Nikki Bellas in the world. It's not interesting to me. Just go on the internet. I just feel bad for her because she really should be running with the NXT people, the four, quote unquote, four horsewomen. And by the time that they make it up there, if they decide to do anything, she is going to be lumped in with the old hat people that need to be cleared out. It's probably very unfortunate for her career. I hope that that's not true in the macro, but I have that sense. But she's perfectly fine. This match is perfectly fine. And I was worried about Tamina. But they did the smartest thing possible, which is, like, make her look kind of like a monster the other two women were trying to take out, and then knock her out of the match for stretches of the time. Which I know some people just hate that whole formula of a three-way, which just knocks somebody out and then it's one-on-one again. It worked here, though. I thought the match was fun. I do love the Nikki Bella as Stan Hansen finish. It was kind of funny to me. I don't know if anybody else thought that. But yeah, it was fine. It was like, you know, 2.5-star match. You're right down the middle.
Okay.
Perfectly acceptable.
Dylan, what'd you think?
It was perfectly fine. I pretty much agree with that. It was kept relatively short. I don't even think the Brock squash was much longer or much shorter than this.
Yeah, this was like this was like 10 or 12 minutes, bro.
And what couldn't have been that long?
Yeah,
I mean, if it was that long, I'd be absolutely shocked. I mean, maybe it was. I thought it was like 6 or 7 minutes. I mean, it was okay. I kind of cringed when Tamina came out. Apparently, Naomi had some family issues. I hope everything's all right with her. Because Tamina, I think, is absolutely awful.
We had an argument for me on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It was fine. I sort of agree with Johnny about Paige in the sense that I think she is has shown flashes of brilliance over the years, but I also feel like, if we're being honest, she's had chances at times on the main roster and she hasn't delivered to the level that you would expect. So it's not as if she's never had a chance. Having said that, the last month I think she's been pretty good. I really like the match with Nikki from the last pay-per-view from Money in the Bank or whatever. I thought she had a match with Alicia Fox on Raw this week that I thought was better than any match on this show. So, to me, she's actually having a little bit of a run, even without working with those ladies down at Wholesale. So maybe that bodes well for her. It was perfectly watchable. At no point did I want to skip it. So I guess to that extent, it worked. My only criticism of this really is, we had a 20-minute match involving Jericho and Neville, where the wrong guy went over, and then we have this match, which wasn't terribly long and was okay, but we didn't get a Cesaro match and we didn't get the New Day tag or Lucha Dragons tag. And I think either one of those, by shaving some time off the first match and not having this match on the show or maybe some other creative stuff, could have been squeezed on into that 2-hour block.
Yeah, we were both going to meet in the middle on this. It went about 8 or 9 minutes. So a little bit longer than what you thought, a little bit shorter than what I thought, but yeah, it went about 8 or 9 minutes. To me, really, I thought Tamina looked kind of good in this. Actually, she had her vicious lariats, her clotheslines, which the other girls sold like death. She had her headbutts, which I'm a headbutt mark. You want to call me a mark, Dylan, call me a headbutt. I take headbutts in wrestling every day of the week. Junkyard dog headbutts, loaded mask headbutts, big dancing black guy headbutts, Samoan headbutts, flying headbutts, Harley Race headbutt. I'm a headbutt mark, either way. But she looked good on offense. I actually felt bad for her because there's one spot where, after they did that car crash powerbomb suplex in the corner, where she covers the girl and the referee tells her, no, cover this one, like refused to count the cover. Did y'all see that?
No, I love that, actually, because they played it off for the one time, and I'm going to totally backtrack on myself here.
You love that
here.
The ref fucked the matchup?
No, well, we finished, goddammit.
Man, Johnny, get angry.
From me and you earlier, Will, is spilling over.
I was being hostile at you, Dylan.
We're boiling over. We're affecting Johnny.
Dylan, how
stop
many
it, Mom and Dad. Stop it. I'm going to go in my room and put my hands over my ears and
hold
rock
on,
back
hold
and
on,
forth.
Hold on, motherfucker. You got to understand. Me and Dylan have been arguing for a decade. Okay, a decade.
I know. I'm friends with you both. I fucking hear it. No, what I was going to say is the one time that the commentary crew actually kind of came through was that they played it off as though, like, she went to pin one. And I'm hoping this is the same spot because it sounds exactly like the one where Tamina came in. She tried to cover Nikki, and she didn't get the cover, and I didn't notice the ref then. So I think it's the same one. She then ran across the ring and tried to cover Paige. And I actually liked the urgency of it because I feel like especially this generation of wrestlers with WWE, with there not being a ton of other places to work, that are major league, and with everybody being deathly afraid.
Yeah, but hold on, Johnny.
They don't do things with urgency. They're like, that's not what I was told to do. So they're just like, what's my script say?
Like, but
they're
like looking. Here's what you're missing, Johnny. Here's what you're missing. I'm going to interrupt you, and I apologize.
No, go ahead.
Let me explain why. Is because you're right, that happened, but here's what happened. Okay, the spot happens, the powerbomb suplex spot, okay? She pins Nikki Bella, like who's the closest mm-hmm. diva to her. And the referee is over there and basically pointing to the other one like, no, come over to this one. So she goes, pins Paige, Paige kicks out, then she runs over to Nikki to try and pin Nikki.
Oh, so it was the opposite. Okay.
It was like she ended up trying to pin somebody three times, not twice.
Oh, so I forgot about the one after. Yeah, you're right.
You see where I'm coming from?
The referee is also part of this goofy system where he has to look on his inside wrist for the play call, so to speak. I don't know what.
Yeah, it was just a minor complaint, really, that kind of,
yeah, but it's,
you know.
Yeah, I think, yeah, we should position this as being, like, not the end of the world, but it's symptomatic of the small underlying problems that
sure.
company has
sure.
with their need for control and in patterns, because it's a television production. They take it to such a level that things being organic can be really difficult with that company, which is one of the reasons I do really like Owens being around. But.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next match. I don't think any of us are going to lose sleep talking about this match. Next match,
Brock. We're not going to remember it tomorrow.
maybe not. Brock Lesnar versus Kofi Kingston. Early on, I really liked it. I liked Kofi trying to hit Brock with his weak-ass offense, and Brock just shrugging it off. I liked that he escaped the first German as the crowd was chanting Suplex City at him, and Brock said, okay, for the next German, I'm going to lock this in and give you one of the most vicious Germans I've ever delivered. And after that, it was pretty much a big squash. Dylan, what did you think about Brock Lesnar squashing Kofi?
Well, I have to say that I thought Brock's reaction to Kofi's offense, particularly his strikes, is the exact way Shibata should react when Tanahashi throws one of those lame-ass forearms. But the weirdest thing about the match to me was, well, actually there's two weird things, and I guess they're kind of connected. The first was the fact that Brock was not anywhere near as over as you would have thought. Like, if you believe into the hype that some people will try and sell you, that Brock is this once-in-a-lifetime unbelievable star, he's bigger than Jesus, he's bigger than the Beatles, he's bigger than everybody, you would have been like, huh? Because he came out, and it's not that he had no reaction, and I mean, the crowd got more into it over the course of the squash and was really with him, especially at the end when the New Day ran out and he, you know, steamrolled through everybody. But it was just like, I don't know if it was that even the crowd there couldn't be all that excited about seeing Brock wrestle in what was obviously going to be a squash match or what, but there usually when Brock has a match, it does have that special feel to it. You know what I mean? And I think what Johnny has been touching on about the, you know, almost Pavlovian response to the live crowds everywhere, not just in Japan, but all over the place, kind of tells you that Brock is not a TV commodity, because he's never on TV. He shows up, you know, 6-7 times a year. So the Pavlovian response that you're supposed to have, you don't have with Brock. I mean, yes, they chanted Suplex City and all that stuff, but the reaction that you have with a lot of these people because of that sort of, this is a TV star and I know how I'm supposed to react because I saw it on TV, I thought this match kind of lacked that. As far as the actual match itself, the other thing that I thought was kind of problematic was I wanted this to be, you know, like a really fun steamroller squash, right? You know, and I thought that's what we were going to get. I thought the New Day would run in even before the match was over, and Brock would squash all three of them, you know, just kind of lay everybody out, and it would be like this big, almost train wreck scene with Brock standing tall, and it'd go 3 or 4 minutes, and instead it was like, Brock looked bored, which I guess makes sense because Kofi is a ridiculous opponent for him to be facing in the first place, but it wasn't like good bored. It wasn't like, okay, this is, a ridiculous opponent for me to be wrestling, so I'm scoffing at his existence. It was like,
I thought that's exactly what it was.
To me, it came across like, man, I hope Rangins is ready to go see Saito here, because I'm done with this shit. Like, I mean, he had none of the vibe of Brock Lesnar that I've come to expect. I thought it was a really empty and kind of uninteresting squash. It was not in any way exciting, which, I think ideally it could have been really exciting because they could have done a bit with the New Day ran in before the match was over and Brock lays everybody out and then fucking steamrolls them with like a huge F5 at the finish. And instead it just felt like, he hit a couple suplexes and then hit the F5 and okay, yeah, whatever. I mean, I there were probably 150,000 Techwood Drive squashes that were better than this. This was like not anything entertaining.
I'm disagreeing with you. I thought, like I said, I don't inherently hate Kofi. He's not one of my favorite. You can't call me a Kofi Mark and get away with it because I'm simply not a Kofi Mark. But I love that Kofi came out, tried to do his kicks, tried to, run away from him, tried to hit him. And then when he did, nail him with, his drop kicks or his weak offense, Brock just shrugged it off like, are you kidding me? You're gonna hit me with that weak sauce? And then when Kofi escaped that first German suplex, that second German where Brock, caught him, hooked him, he didn't let go. He folded Kofi like an accordion, and then he did a few more for his suplexes, and he killed him off the way he should have. I thought it was perfectly fine. I thought Brock, I agree with you, he should have had a better opponent. I would have liked to see Brock Lesnar versus Big E. That's why I was kind of disappointed in New Day running out at the end, because Brock Lesnar versus Big E could be a really good power match, where Big E could do some things to get Brock a little bit dazed and a little bit wounded. But
to me, if you're going to put Brock out there for 3 or 4 minutes, the match needs to have pace and excitement. And I don't think the match had either. It was just like, okay, whatever.
I thought it was fun, man. I enjoyed watching it. What about you, Johnny?
I enjoyed it too. I did. I was going to say, it bears mentioning at this point. I was going to kind of say this for the end. What listeners don't know is, when we get on the line, we chat for a moment or two before we do this. And in the case of today, both of you guys were saying to deal with my weird schedule. But right before we went on, Dylan said, hey, sorry if I shit on the show that you two both loved. And he was joking. But I don't love this show. I think the neatness of the show and the reason that I feel somewhat pleasant about it is because it was breezy. 2 hours of my life. It was in a unique setting, and it had one or two matches that were of interest. And this is one of them where I was interested, and I didn't think this overstayed its welcome, which was important because it shouldn't have been. I got what I wanted out of it. I thought that Kofi at least showed some energy, and, the whole weak offense, that adds to it, to that moment, Dylan was kind of saying. But I wasn't even thinking of, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other about Kofi and his offense. I know a lot of people don't like it. I just liked that he was making, the depictions were correct to me. Here's this monster, he's going to kill this guy, so this guy's going to make the effort, he's going to, it's like a cat and mouse thing. And it was short and quick, and Brock destroyed him, which is the whole point. He got to, it would have been interesting to have Big E face him, but that, wasn't quite what we were getting, and I was kind of okay with that. I feel like if Big E's going to, I know he's not depicted as being upper mid-card at this point as a single, but that's something I'd rather see on, a pay-per-view proper or something, or, a small little mini-feud in between. The draw here was that Brock isn't a TV character, which, Dylan is right, it somewhat hurts it, because of the Pavlov dog thing, people get confused, that I don't know what they want me to do. But there still is that buzz, in my opinion, at least. I felt it, too. I was like, okay, I'll just... Brock, at this point, because he's there so sparingly and because he is so unique, you do kind of watch it, or at least I do. I don't want to speak for everybody else, but I watch it like, well, what is he going to do? It's almost like an event. It is that kind of perfect melding of Vince McMahon's obsession with spectacle, with no substance, along with the substance of being fascinated by a wrestler / character. So I was fine with it for 8 minutes? Of my life, that's pretty cool. So I'm fine with it, even though it isn't something I'll probably ever watch again.
Why? You're never going to watch this match again? How dare you?
I'm not going to remember this show in a week, believe me.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, guys, we only have two matches left, okay? Because, you know, there are only five matches on this two-hour show. And let's take a break for the Place to Be Nation. And when we come back, we'll look at the two co-main events, so to speak. You're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Show, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows, and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, tag teams back again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family. Okay, welcome back, Place to Be Nation. We're here, and we're doing the reaction show for The Beast in the East, WWE Network special, coming from Japan. And I'm here with my buddies Johnny P. and Dylan Hells, and our next match is for the NXT title. It's Kevin Owens versus Finn Balor. Balor comes out in his weird Rastafarian voodoo Spider-Man gimmick, whatever the hell you want to call it. Kevin Owens comes out in his gym shorts and his t-shirt like he's known to do. And my man, Johnny P., this is yours first. Owens versus Balor, what'd you think about it?
Well, first I want to apologize to our European listeners. Will is from a place called Texas, and so he's not as cultured. So he doesn't know that it's Balor instead of Balor. He was thinking of the school in Texas.
Oh, okay.
I thought you would laugh, and then there was this sound, and I'm like, oh, Will.
I legitimately fuck up his name?
Yeah, it's pronounced Balor, but it's not his real name. I don't think we're offending anybody.
Yeah, what, is his name really Devitt?
Or is it Nick Devitt? Is it Fergal Nick Devitt? Is that his legal name?
I don't know. Who cares?
I'm kind of looking at Dylan here.
I have no idea. Fergal Devitt is what I've always heard him referred to. I have no clue what his actual legit name is.
Okay. For some reason, I thought he literally was. All right. Let's get to the match.
What did you think about the match?
I thought it was fine. It wasn't as inspiring as a lot of the other, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the other selections from, you know, NXT over the last like year or so. But it was, this kind of goes back to, the three of us did a podcast. It's got to be over a year now, but everybody should go on the Place to Be Nation files and look up, I think it was a Goodwill Wrestling. It was the one that we all did on being internet fans and growing up and kind of your relationship to wrestling as it relates to being a quote unquote smart fan. And I always really loved that show that we did because we got to get into a depth on a lot of stuff that isn't normally talked about. And I always struggle with this. This is why I'm referencing. We reference Japan and the influence of the newsletters and how we perceive these things, as well as how we process wrestling as fans now that we're in this niche of a niche culture. I go in and out. Like, half the time, I'm watching it as this presentation and as this performance art thing, and I'm not emotionally involved. Like, it's, I don't need, quote-unquote, my guy in this match to win because I didn't have enough emotion for it. So there were times when I was just kind of going, this is a decent to good performance, and I'm detached. And then there are other moments where, like, the crowd and Owen's talking to people and the little things that they would do, when I would get sucked in. And that's what I want, honestly. I don't want to be kind of like, not above it, but detached from it, you know, clinically looking at it. Even though that's kind of at times what we do on this thing. So there were times when I was in, there were times when I was out. I love that Owens would do little things to fuck with the crowd. I love when he grabbed the headlock. I think he like ran the ropes and then like acted like he was going to do some high-end move and just grabbed the headlock and said that he didn't give a shit about this country or these people. They built it to a point where the crowd really wanted, they did start, I actually had a note like, you know what, they're chanting this is awesome, but they're not chanting for Balor, and, you know, commentary is pushing, he's been there for 8 years, and, you know, they're doing their hyperbole about how he's a legend in Japan, which he wasn't, but he was popular. But by the end, I had to kind of like delete that note because they were chanting his name on the final stretch. It accomplished what it was supposed to do. It won't be in match of the year discussion, but there's nothing that I saw where I went, you do. Okay, legitimate though. Yeah, I know the wink wink comment there.
Hold on. Well, I'm going to defend this match after Dylan destroys it.
Well, no, I liked it. I don't think it was as high as their ceiling was as performers, but that's okay. I'm going to assume that they have a few years in them, that they can do something on an even bigger stage together if that's the way it goes booking. I was happy with this match and what came out of it. We kind of knew that he was winning anyway. And for what they had in the way they built it up, like I saw that NXT, those clips that they made a special out of for Finn Balor. I got so emotionally invested in this guy, which shocked me because I didn't really have a feeling about him one way or the other, but those specials were, I was like, holy crap, man, I'm there with,
I felt the same way, man.
The girl who dyed her hair, who's like, he's that person who like changed my life. I'm like, yeah, man, my life's changed too. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I'm in my room, I've never met these people.
No shit, man, that's exactly how I felt. I thought,
yeah, which is awesome. That's what they need to be doing. The production, that was great. And so that's really where my, you know, I back-ended into it, half-assed. But I was a little bummed at times that I wasn't emotionally involved in the match, considering how invested I was in that, in those segments. But they brought it around and got me by the end. And I appreciated it. And it was good. This should have been the main event, but I knew it wasn't going to be.
Dylan.
I agree that this should have been the main event. I totally agree with. I think,
I agree with that also.
It was the, even everything from at the end with Fujinami coming out, with Michael Cole butchering his name, but even that I thought was, you know, kind of added to the idea of it should have been the main event. You know, like, I don't know. I was surprised they didn't do more with a Tommy who was sitting there. That was a little odd. But as far as the match itself, I thought it was a good match. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was a perfectly fine match. You know, there would have been, the best match on Superstars, maybe, half the episodes of Superstars this year. So, I mean, which sounds like I'm damning with faint praise, but there's been a lot of good matches on that show. it, you know, I have a weird relationship with Owen Steen and Owens or Steen or whatever you want to call him, in the sense that there are times where I think what he does when he talks during the match is really good healing. And there are times where I think it crosses the line into like a really shitty, like stand-up comedy routine. And I thought he was straddling the fence at times tonight. I thought it was a little bit, I don't know if it was just the way he was mic'd or what, but it, to me, this felt a little bit closer to PWG Steen than to the more refined heelish Steen that we've seen in WWE. And I'm not even sure that, that's even fair. I think it may have just been the acoustics in the building, literally, as silly as that sounds. So that, I didn't dislike it, but it wasn't necessarily something that added to the match a great deal for me. Whereas at other times in the WWE, I think his antics have helped his matches. Balor's is perfectly average. You know, he's a nice average pro wrestler that for some reason people think is great. I mean, he's not particularly good. He's not particularly bad. He's just there. He has a good look, and he's, you know, he's over and he's got a couple of nice high spots, but, which he hit fine tonight, or last night rather, this morning, whatever the hell you want to say. It was an okay match. I didn't, really have, it, you know, I think the issue with emotional connectivity is a good point that Johnny made, because I was never an Owens guy on the indies. Not that I disliked him, but he was never like my guy. And I've never been a Balor guy. It was never really a Devitt guy. So this was just like, okay, you know, but having said that, I like their match from NXT TV more than this match, which they had earlier in the year. So it's not as if they, you know, they haven't had a match that I enjoyed. I thought that match was better than this one. Not necessarily way better, but I preferred it to this match. Owens losing, I think, is an interesting dynamic, and it's something that I want to mention because I said I would get back around to it. I think it is really telling that on the same show where, in the opening match, in a match where there's no cost at all for the newer guy to win, they have the new guy lose to a retired reality show guy who hosts a shitty podcast and is in a shitty band. And that's what he does basically full time. But in the match, later in the show, you know, between two young guys, the guy who's in a feud with the top star in the company, if we're being honest, and who really arguably should not be losing at all at this point, let alone clean, loses clean. Now, I have no problem with Owens losing clean. I want to stress that. It doesn't bother me that he lost clean. I think the way the NXT title has been presented is preferable that title is transferred on a clean loss. And so it's not – in a vacuum, I don't have a problem with that. But in the context of a show where you have Neville lose in that opener to Jericho of all people, Owens is a guy where a loss theoretically does hurt him. Because they're still trying to build his credibility as a top-level heel. And, you know, now he's lost to a guy that the average WWE fan, it doesn't even see. Because he's never appeared on WWE television, or real WWE television. And he lost clean as a whistle. And this guy is a guy that's going into a big match with John Cena. So, now, the flip side of that is maybe that means Owens is going to win that match against Cena. You know, that would be kind of cool. But if he doesn't win that match versus Cena, I really think this is a stupid decision, to be honest. I understand why they would do it, but if he doesn't win that match, I think losing to Balor makes almost no sense at all. Because they're doing this huge show for NXT at the Barclays Center the night before SummerSlam, and they're going to need some protected guys that are over that have some regular WWE credibility. And Owens is the guy they got. So, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the way the finish was done and who won, given what happened on the rest of the show and the way these guys are positioned in the WWE as a whole.
Okay, well, I'm going to defend the match a little bit. I know you had some misgivings about Owen's character in the match. I thought he did some really cool things. You know, I really liked him setting up that headlock to piss the fans off. It looked like he was gaining like a full head of steam. And then he just slows it down, hooks the headlock in, and just say, man, I'm fucking with you guys and I'm fucking with this guy because he's not on my level. There was a point later on in the match where he was just clinging to Balor's clinging to Balor's leg. Okay, and he looked like such a chicken shit. I don't know. I thought it was pretty in tune with his character. I loved his little John Cena tribute to let the people know, hey, I'm still feuding with John Cena. I kind of liked it, man. I liked that he really took the early portion of the match, because I'm with you, Dylan. I don't like Balor. Like, really, before that special, I didn't care. I thought his NXT stuff so far, because you've been on the reaction shows with me, so far, I thought his NXT stuff has been kind of stale, but I thought this was a pretty good match. I thought it built very well, especially because Owens made it a point to be the cocky heel who was just really destroying Balor early on. And then, man, after Balor hit that sling blade, you know, Owens hanging on for dear life on the leg, the double stomp, the near falls at the end. I liked him in the Cena match. I liked him in here. There were several points where I thought, okay, the match is over, and it kept going in a good way. One of the things I really liked was that Owens never hit his powerbomb finisher. You know, it wasn't like the second Cena match where, like, they were kicking out of finishers or whatever, or, you know, whatever. He never got a chance to hit his finisher. Now, it did take Balor two double stomps. What does he call it? The coup de grace?
Yeah.
It's a fucking double stomp. Shut the fuck up. Anyway, he took two double stomps to pin him, but I like the fact that Owens was never able to hit his pop-up powerbomb. I thought that was Balor evaded that thing, and I thought that was a really good part of the match that actually added to the match. I would not hesitate to say that this is my favorite Fergal Devitt / Finn Balor match that I've seen, because like you, Dylan, I didn't really care for his New Japan stuff. Haven't been impressed with him in NXT. And I thought this match delivered. It did what I wanted to do. I gave it a high thumbs up. I thought it was a legitimately great match. And I thought it made the show worth watching. So I'm going to disagree with you guys. I thought y'all were a bit harsh on it. But having said that, you know, that's why we do the reaction shows. If we all agreed on these matches, there'd be no point in doing the shows. So anyway.
Hey, Will?
Yeah, sure, Johnny.
Considering that this was pretty much the end of the special, and then they for some reason broadcast the house show main event, I just want to make one or two other points because I'm about to go pretty quiet on the next thing. One thing I was looking at, because this is so me, you guys are my friends, but even people who've heard me on this thing, this is such a Johnny P-ism. I was particularly looking for when Finn Balor came out, because this is the biggest stage that he would do his, you knew he was doing the whole demon entrance thing. And right before he came out, it dawned on me, they don't have the WWE Network in Japan yet. So my idea of, I want to see how over on a bigger stage this, you know, grand entrance is that people talk about is something that could be amazing at a WrestleMania if they play it right several years down the line. There wasn't much. It was kind of a bummer. And it's also, again, it kind of, maybe I'm just using this to feed in my own, you know, as data to feed in my own example from before. These WWE fans, I don't know how many people there, I felt like they were rooting for Balor because of the Pavlov's dog thing of WWE, as opposed to going, that's Fergal Devitt. I watched him in New Japan a bunch of times. I'm sure there was a percentage of the audience that did, but I didn't get that sense because they really tried to push like this guy was some big deal in Japan. And I didn't get a sense that the people loved him in the way that they wanted you to think that he would. And the entrance was kind of an example of that. Now, part of that, again, is because they don't have the network, but they didn't start changing his name until late in the match. And I felt that was more because this was pretty simple. You could be a 5-year-old and go, oh, the chubby guy is the bad guy, and I should really like the clean-cut guy with the abs.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with knowing who the bad guy is and the good guy is. So what? You know?
No, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does go to kind of like the things that fascinate me about the stuff is like not only the presentation, but the perceptions that people have and why they react the way that they do. And if it's just in a certain context or it's like a macro thing that's going to spread wider.
Yeah. I like crowd reactions, but I've never let.
I know you and I go back and forth. We've been living around what, our eighth year of talking about this.
Why am I going to let the crowd dictate my enjoyment of a match?
First of all, it shows the perception of them within the fan base, which I think is important because that helps move them up or down a card a lot of times. Number two, it's an atmospheric thing, and I know we somewhat disagree on that, because you'll watch wrestling a lot of times with the sound off. Whereas it doesn't kill it for me, but it does. Definitely atmosphere enhances things for me.
I don't have a problem with that. Like, I agree. There have been plenty of times on these reaction shows where I say, man, the crowd was hot for this match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I noticed those things. But what I'm saying...
Oh, and they were into this, too, and that's a good sign to be.
But, dude, the crowd was into Sting versus Triple H WrestleMania, which was a shit show. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, but those are legends to those people. They don't perceive them the way people that appear on these reaction shows do.
And it didn't enhance my enjoyment of that shit show either. You know what I mean?
That's true, too.
So, you know. Dylan, what about the Sting versus Triple H match? How'd you like that one?
Oh, God, I'm fucking even gonna say that.
The
other thing I want to pimp real quick is that I was interested in Dylan was talking about his relationship to, as a fan and as an observer to, Sting / Owen. And I'm a Northeasterner. I was at the first ROH show. I thought they were my promotion after ECW. And I found Sting particularly analogous to Rob Van Dam. Which is that by the time people were like, oh, my God, Sting, I was over it. In the same way, by like 99, 2000, as they get on TNN, ECW gets on TNN, everybody's like, oh, Rob Van Dam, you know, and I'm like, I'm so done with this person. So I had that relationship with Sting by the end, the last 2.5 years of his ROH run. I'm like back in on Sting. Like, I actually started watching some PWG stuff that I had my collection from years ago that I honestly like bought and never really watched much. So I've been stumbling upon some of these matches that he's had. And I forgot that I enjoyed this guy. So it was like a neat thing to be able to get into him again and go back and look at stuff. And my final thing off of this is just look, if you did or did not enjoy the show and you're bored today on the 4th of July, maybe you don't have a family, maybe you hate holidays, if you have access to it, go watch.
Hey, we also have some international friends who, for them, this is...
This is our fake little thing. I was up in Canada the other day. They have their fake little thing called Canada Day, which is way cooler, by the way.
Yeah, but they're not a real country. They're not a real country.
But listen, go seek out PWG Giant Sized Annual Number 4, I think it's called, or some.
Hey, hold on. Aren't they still part of the Commonwealth?
Who?
Canada.
What Commonwealth, us?
Well, the UK Commonwealth. Aren't they still, like, tied to the Queen? Don't they still put her on the Queen?
Dude, I got an earful about that last week when I was up in Ottawa. It's fractured. Ottawa would be, but, like, anything with French provinces is, like, it's like Texas. It's completely analogous. You guys, like, you want to just have your own thing? And every once in a while within your state, somebody says, we should secede. That's kind of how it is apparently in the Quebec. Hey. But the other people, they don't care. They just go, yeah, leave, whatever. You're not going to do anything. Like, it's white noise for them.
This is just me giving my Canadian buddies Dave Musgrave and Stephen Graham.
It's Stephen. It's like,
yeah.
Go back and watch that show in particular. I used to love this, and I completely forgot about it. If you miss Daniel Bryan, and you've never seen him, like, when he was, like, wrestling a different... I forgot how different he had been. And I was a huge fan of him at this time. This show is from July of 07. He wrestles two separate matches. One's a street fight against Necro Butcher. The other one's an impromptu title match with Sami Zayn of NXT, who was El Generico. They're two really neat matches. And it was just so much fun to go back and watch that. So if you're bored today and you're listening to this and you go, you know what? These guys are arguing back and forth. I don't give a fuck about this special from Tokyo. Then go watch that show. It's particular in particular, the Danielson matches. And I believe Steen is on that show, too, and he's kind of enjoyable on that, too. And Pac might be on that show. I can't remember.
All right. Well, okay. Well, make sure y'all check those matches out. Oh, okay, Dylan, what do you got?
Hold on. Let me step on the host toes here.
I want to
ask flat out, because I don't want my point to be evaded, because I'm generally curious about this. Did it not bother you guys that Owens that they had this match with Owens losing clean, and he's in a feud with Cena on the same show where Neville loses clean in the opener to Jericho? Did I not bother? Am I the only person that's bothered by that? Like contextually?
Here's the thing, Dylan. After WrestleMania, when we saw all the geriatric giants win their matches, right? Like if last year's show was building up all of the young guns just so that they could be jobbed out a month later, you know, or a week later or a day later, then this year's WrestleMania was, we love our old timers. Okay. After that, and after doing these lackluster pay-per-view network specials, whatever you want to call them, bro, I expect WWE booking to suck. When I go into these shows, I expect them to make stupid decisions. Like, in order for me to continue to do the reaction shows, to watch these specials, I kind of have to subtract myself from the booking just to enjoy them, because I'm like you, man, I get frustrated. Yes, it's fucking stupid. Like, why couldn't Cena have come out, right, just a little bit earlier? I mean, hell, he was going to be there in 3 minutes anyway. So what? Just come out. Do his "you can't see me" to Owens. Owens turns around and then, you know, gets a kick in the face from Balor. Right? Cool. Right? We've seen that finish before. Would have been completely acceptable way for Balor to get Owens. And Owens can be pissed that Cena cost him his belt, which is more incentive to go fight on the Battleground pay-per-view, right?
Yes.
I'm with you. Yeah, no, I'm with you. They do fucking stupid shit. I agreed with you. Jericho should not have won that match. You know, the only reason Nikki Bella is holding that fucking belt and we're not seeing these kick-ass NXT girls come up is so that they can say that AJ Lee didn't have the longest fucking title reign. You know, they do stupid shit. They have Kane in the main event. So I have to subtract myself from the booking, or, dude, you'd have Johnny Sorrow running this fucking show. I mean, sorry, but I do. I'm with you. I get your point, but I can't be I'm emotionally invested in wrestling, you know, as a hobby. I mean, dude, you and I and Johnny, dude, we spend way more fucking time than normal people invested in this shit, you know? But I cannot be invested in the WWE universe. Does that make sense?
That's fair. I've argued that one of the worst things that happened to my wrestling fandom in the last 5 years was the Mark Henry Hall of Pain run, because the WWE sucked me back in with a character that I was legitimately interested in and excited about, and I got to the point where I cared about booking again. For years, I didn't. I watched shoulder pass, and that killed me.
Dylan.
You know, that was brutal. Because now it's like they showed me they could do something right, but I had given up complete hope.
Yes.
And now it's so hard to ignore the booking again. It makes it much easier for me to. Because I know they're capable of it. Like, for several years, I just assumed they're incapable of it.
Well, no, because Dylan, at the time, and I remember this clearly, I'm sure I could go back and see it, when CM Punk did his pipe bomb promo, and they had the great main event where Punk walks out of the, I said Cena, I meant CM Punk. Well, he does his promo, he wins the match at Money in the Bank. You and I were defending it. You know, we were like, dude, let's see where this goes. We didn't like the stupid tournament, but we liked the idea that they were doing something different. Plus, Hall of Pain was going on at the same time, 2011, yep. Right? Yep. So you and I were both on board at the same time saying, man, let's give these people a shot. This is going to be good. And then, you know, what happens? Everybody else was proven right. Daniel Bryan, we get sucked back in again because of their stupid booking decisions, actually made the Daniel Bryan run up even more special when he wins it. WrestleMania. Then it turns out he was just going to get jobbed to Brock anyway. It didn't matter if he got injured.
But, you know, then the Brock Lesnar run. Holy shit. Look who, how they're booking Brock Lesnar. So, yeah, we know they can do it. You know what I mean? But, dude, they're running out of people for me to care about. CM Punk quits. So there's one guy. Mark Henry is now a perennial jobber. There's another guy. Daniel Bryan will probably never wrestle again. There's another guy. Dude, Cesaro has already put out feelers. He wants to go to New Japan. There's another guy. Who the fuck am I going to care about on this show in 6 months?
It's good point.
You know what I mean? So if I can't care about anybody, but I like wrestling, then I'm going to have to, I have to step away from booking. Because, dude, we can literally go back and look at, like, so many pay-per-views and main events and special events and say, great wrestling, shit booking. Thumbs up for the wrestling, thumbs down for the booking. And we've probably done it on probably half the shows we've watched. So I have to disassociate myself from the booking because I expect it to be stupid. Now I just have to say, okay, can these guys go out there and perform? Can they get me drawn into their match? You know, I agree with you. Owens should not have lost clean here. You know, because no matter what they're trying to do with NXT, it is not the equivalent of being on the main roster. You know, people will still have this idea that they're trainees, not superstars. And I think it sucks because NXT shows have generally blown away a lot of the WWE stuff in booking and in performance. But that's perception. So for me to continue to do these shows, for me to continue watching this product, I got disengaged from the booking, you know? I mean, fuck. And, I mean, the alternative is stop watching altogether. And I think there's enough good wrestling where I don't have to do that. So that's my answer to your question. Johnny, would you?
That's a fair rant.
Yeah, and I'll be more concise because Will said basically a lot of what I would say anyway. Again, look, if you think the three of us are at all interesting, go back and find that show from, I believe it was last summer, where we talked about being a fan. I forget the actual title of it.
I think it was part of the Goodwill Wrestling series. Look under Goodwill Wrestling, that place to be nation.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I think if you look for probably my name, because Dylan's on more than me. So if you look for my name in the Goodwill Wrestling, and it's somewhere from last summer, that's the show. And that's probably one of the smartest things the three of us ever put to, I guess, to tape, to be old, like, Dave Meltzer. it really is, I go into it more there, but for me, 75% of my viewing is somebody who's looking, judging, not even judging, but looking to absorb and comment on performance art. And I use the term single serving fan. I don't usually sit through a lot of full shows, especially if they're on tape, so to speak. I'll do the pay-per-views now because I have a buddy who invites me over and I have some food with him and his wife and his kid. Generally, I rarely do what we did this morning where we watched this full show, especially like I watched the main event we're about to talk about in three parts because I just didn't care. It's not of interest to me. I would almost rather pick and choose the matches that I would like to view and then discuss. Because a lot of it is you find a way to compartmentalize it to maintain your being a fan because you do love it as a hobby. So for me, 75% of it is looking at this very influenced by the internet and newsletters for over 20 years now, version of looking at it. The booking plays, you know what? I had safeguarded in my mind. Dylan's completely right. I had safeguarded in my mind though. I was completely looking at the build and the execution of Owens dropping the title. It never dawned on me for a second that he wouldn't. I kind of subconsciously understood that they had somewhat booked themselves into a corner with this hot new character who still had a belt for their minor league system. So I was okay with him losing here because I expected it, and it didn't even really dawn on me because I think I didn't want to think about the fact of it being troubling in some way. I think for what the way that they had put themselves in this position, they did a pretty good job of it. But this one's a young guy and a young guy. The first one's more offensive to me in quotes, where I wanted to bring it up, because I do hate this whole thing that they've had for years where, like, oh my God, this guy wrestled in 1998, 99, and we're obsessed with our history and this marketing thing that we've done where the Attitude Era was, you know, somehow it's now become this great in-ring thing, and not just, you know, a hot period.
Yeah,
where they were doing different things.
I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what. You know, the other side of that is that they've never found the happy medium. Is they used to abandon history altogether. You know what I mean?
I know. And it's great that they're embracing it. And I guess I'll have to compromise. As I say, I already have.
The problem is, though, they haven't found a happy medium. Because they're still driving, and this is where we talk about booking, and Dylan, you'll agree with this, they're still driving narratives that make no sense. They're writing stories that make no sense.
Oh, the writing is horrible.
You know?
That's why I don't watch Raw. I wait to see the reviews, and then I pick matches.
Put it this way. If Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes ever had tagged up, did they ever tag up?
According to your Zellner podcast, they did on at least one occasion.
On one occasion in 20 fucking years together. You know what I mean? That's the whole point. That whereas with this company, they're so lazy. You know, Reigns and let's just say Reigns and Wyatt are feuding now. I guarantee you, 6 months from now, if they're both baby faces, they'll team up 3 or 4 times.
Oh yeah, and it'll never be mentioned. It's just they're both good guys now.
So the history they choose to remember and forget is completely random.
I just want to stress this, and then we can move on. It's not so much that I have a problem with Owens losing, or even with Owens losing clean. It's the total package of Owens losing clean to a young guy who's not even on the main show, and Neville losing in the opener to an old guy whose claim to fame is hosting a reality show no one watches. That is the part that bothers me. It's both together because it completely illustrates how, you know, the young guys will put each other over, and they're not protected even when they're pushed well. They're still not protected.
Right.
You know, they're expected to lose to each other 50-50 style, and the guys that are protected are the guys who don't show up, the guys who are there on limited basis, limited dates. And you know what? We can be – let's be honest. Forget all the health stuff and everything else that allegedly has come out. The number one reason CM Punk is not in the WWE is because of shit like that. I can say that with 100% certainty.
No, I think he admitted as much is that it wasn't fun to work there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That you're right, the health stuff. Now, that's part of it because you know if you have a health problem. I mean, shit, how long did it take for them to admit that Daniel Bryan had a concussion? You know,
they still haven't admitted it. We now know that because of things that have sort of come out, but they have not publicly admitted it.
Oh, okay. But
we know because of reporters, not because of official proclamation.
But even then, because of their antiquated way of thinking, well, if you're injured and you're out, unless you're Cena, who's, you know, Cena, or who, you know, maybe Orton, I guess. Orton's been injured a couple of times. Well, now you're injury prone. We're not going to push you anymore. So people are afraid that they're going to lose that main event push / main event paycheck. Whereas, you know, any logical company would be like, wait a minute. If our guys are healthy, they can perform and make us money. You know, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Let's move on to the stupid main event. it is stupid. One, because on TV, Kane is part of the authority, right?
Yes.
This is what I was talking about. I have to disengage myself from booking. Wade Barrett is a complete fucking jobber. There's no point for him to ever be in any main event because he has no credibility, correct?
He can't beat R-Truth.
Exactly. So how in the fuck do I think that a member of the authority, you know, who's old and decrepit and sucks and a jobber are going to be the two most over guys in the company, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, and I was actually surprised Dolph Ziggler was not over in Japan. I don't think the Japanese really cared about him here. Johnny, just because you're Johnny, I know you don't have much to say, so I'm going to go with you first. What'd you think of the main event?
Perfectly fine, but it was basically a house show match. You know, picking up on what we were just saying, why are Kane and Barrett even cohesively teaming? Just because they're both evil?
Complete random pairing. There's no logic to it.
At least Cena and Ziggler have a little bit of history, both being baby faces and having to work with each other. But, yeah, I mean, sadly, I was not in on Ziggler initially for several years. And then I was kind of in on him. And then I realized, you know, it's kind of like we were just saying with the CM Punk thing, the famous tweet, the view never changes. The view doesn't change. I mean, this guy just resigned so they can he's going to be stuck where he is forever. He doesn't always do himself any favors on, like, the character, personality, Mike skills. Like, this thing with Lana is just a bomb right now. I'm just waiting for that to be over off TV. At least he's good in the ring. He does certain things well, I guess. I mean, he's never going to be my favorite wrestler, but he was the most likable thing in the match to me. It followed, basically seemed to kind of follow the Southern Tag formula.
Well, there's something to be said about formula, but I'm gonna ramble about formula in a minute. But
yeah. Well, I just thought, but basically, I was just saying, yeah, it was passable because they followed an ebb and flow of a tried and true ebb and flow of doing a match. But I really struggled to pay attention to my TV just to get through this so I could do this podcast.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Nobody gives a shit about Kane. Okay. Now I'll give Kane this. He's cut some really good promos at times over the last few months. I will absolutely defend him in that regard. But that's not an excuse for him to be on TV still every week. You know what I mean? Like the fact that he's managed to have some solid moments is not an excuse for him to be one of the most well protected guys on the roster. Period. But nobody cares about him. He's not a dynamic wrestler in any way. He's not an exciting wrestler in any way. He's not a good wrestler. Wade Barrett is a good wrestler, but he doesn't care anymore. He doesn't care, and it's obvious, and I can't blame him. You know, like, some people might say, well, he's in the main event of this show. He's fucking fodder. You know, he doesn't win on TV. He's done nothing. I mean, if I was him, I'd put in about as much effort as he put in this match, too. He'd be an idiot to try any harder. Why would you? You're not going to get anything for it. You know, I mean, this is a guy that was one of the most over guys on the roster when he went down with injury. That's hard. We forget that now. But, you know, last year, when the shows were hot, the two things people always remember when the year sort of collapsed and imploded and turned to shit so quickly was the Shield breakup and Daniel Bryan breaking up or going out with the injury. What people forget is Wade Barrett went out with injury right around that same time too, and he was the guy that was having all the good matches on TV during that period. So and he was super over. You know, the Bad News Barrett character was over too, so they lost him as well. And he has never recovered. They don't. It's the same. It's like kind of like what Will alluded to earlier. The guy gets injured a lot. Now he's got the injury prone reputation. They don't want to do anything with him, but they won't release him. So he's just a guy that takes up a spot. You know, this match was. I understand what you're saying, and you're not wrong, Johnny, to call it like a house show main event. But I almost don't want to defame it with that language because I've been to a lot of WWE house shows that were actually very good, where the main events were better than almost anything we see on TV in any given week. Mm-hmm. And this was a match that, like, it wasn't bad, but it was basically a completely random match thrown into a main event spot for no reason at all that went way too long. I mean, think about this. Even if you really liked the Jericho Neville match, even if you thought it was a great match, and there shouldn't have been any time shaved off of it, you could have still shaved 5 to 10 minutes off of this match.
15 minutes.
I mean, easily, and tightened up some other segments, and we still could have gotten either the Lucha Dragons versus New Day or the Cesaro match on the show. They had two matches on this show, in my opinion, that were needlessly long. The opener, which you guys may disagree with. But I thought it was too long.
Yeah, I
and this match, which I think is indisputably too long, like it wasn't even bad. It was okay, but it wasn't horrible by any stretch. But it was just like, why are we watching this? Why is this going on?
You're right. Hold on. You're right. Mm-hmm. That why are we watching this? But because they maintained that structure, that Southern Tag structure, that's why it was passable, right?
Yes.
But
here's the thing about structure. And I'm a big fan of structure. I like Southern Tags. I like matches with structure. I like matches that make sense or whatever. This match made sense. The heels did a good job of cutting the ring off twice. First with Cena early on, right? And then with Ziggler before Cena gets the big hit. But here's the thing. It's what you do within that structure. Why are the Midnight Express, who I don't give a fuck what anyone says, they're formula wrestlers. The Midnight Express wrestled a formula. And I'm talking about Condrey and Eaton. I'm not talking about Lane and Eaton. I'm talking about Condrey and Eaton. They wrestled a formula. I think Jim Cornette even said, hey, we had like
five shtick things that we like to get in there. You know, like where the tag team members threaten to fight each other, you know, where they hug each other and all this other crap. But they were formula wrestlers. They cut off the ring. But what makes them great at the formula and what makes Kane and Barrett not great? It's what you do within that formula. In this match, there are two parts. It happened twice where Barrett would keep Ziggler from tagging out. So he gets him in like an arm bar and he's pushing Ziggler's face with his boot. Do y'all remember what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of cool. And so if Kane comes in and Kane maybe drops a leg on him or does a knee drop or like, you know, punches him in the rib, something, you would think, wow, okay, these guys are really working this guy over. He gives him the laziest kick on planet fucking Earth that wouldn't hurt a fly. It was like the heel of his shoe brushed up against Ziggler's nipple. That was the extent of the pain that he dished out. And I'm like, just in that one spot, in that hot tag, you could have done something interesting that makes the formula interesting. You know what I mean? And there were a couple of spots in here. You know, remember early on, Barrett had Cena, looked like Cena was going to do like a head scissors on Barrett, but Barrett kicks him in the ribs.
Yep.
You know, like he had him extended in the corner and kicks him. That's a cool spot. But those are little things that make matches cool or formula matches great. But then coming in the ring and then casually kicking a guy and hooking in them headlocks. Holy shit. I liked Jericho grounding Neville with a headlock in the first match of the show, right? Had no problem with it. I liked Kevin Owens putting a headlock on Balor kind of for two reasons, to ground the guy, but also kind of piss off the fans. Dude, the headlocks and chin locks had to go. Half the time they were working over the guy's ribs, so put him in a fucking bear hug. Put him in a Boston crab. Or camel clutch. You know what I mean? Mix it up. It's like now they're being trained that the only way you can kill time is with a headlock or chin lock. Made no fucking sense.
Conversation revolves around formula, and not the kind of formula you're talking about necessarily, but like, why did the main event go so long? Because that's what a main event does.
But what I'm saying, though, is that the main event, just by, and look, I'm not like this guy who's saying, oh, you need more moves and matches. I'm just saying, vary it up. Maybe the main event guy should have been watching what the rest of the card was doing so they wouldn't just repeat similar spots, you know, like these headlocks. But I'm saying, like, would it have made a difference if he hooked a bear hug versus a headlock in terms of killing time? No. But it would have made a lot more sense logically in the match if you're already working over the guy's ribs, right, Dylan?
Yes.
It would have added to the match, right?
It's just lazy.
Just fucking lazy. And it just drives me nuts because, like I said, the formula and the length was a problem because of what they did in that time. It wasn't the fact they got that much time. It's what they did in that time. Because, Dylan, you watched a lot of AWA with me. We saw multiple face and peril sections within a match, where they would, like, do it on both partners, right? In those high matches. So the formula is not the problem. It's what the guys did. And Kane is such a shit wrestler with zero creativity that it's impossible. And then the comeback was literally three fucking shoulder blocks, an AA to Kane, and then an AA to Barrett. That's it. Lazy again. Once again, lazy. There was no excitement. We saw last year, with the Wyatts and the Shields and the Usos and the Cesaro and Kids and whoever, these guys can do great tag work. And they can have the Rhodes Brothers, killer main event stretches where you really don't know who's going to hit that finishing move. They did none of that here. You know what I mean? And that's the difference between a passable formula match versus a great match that you're going to remember a year from now. So I'm sorry to take it off on my tangent, but anyway.
No, that's important. Instead of just going, this sucks, we should use what knowledge base we have and what we like as fans and what we don't like to point these things out. It's the whole point of doing these post shows.
And
you're
it's
right.
Not like it would have exerted any more effort. You know what I mean? It's not like the wrestler was going to get blown up by, like I said, doing a fake bear hug versus a fake chin lock. But it would have added to the internal logic of the match. You know? The ending, they could have gone to the hot tag a little bit earlier, had Cena and Ziggler tag in and out for a hot ending with some more near falls. And dude, we would have all been walking away saying, man, that was a really good main event. Can't wait to go to a house show to see a house show main event, if that's what a house show main event looks like. Instead, I'm thinking, fuck this match. You know? You're right. They should have cut off 15 minutes of this match, let Balor versus Owens go on last. And we've always talked about that, the way that they set these shows up. A lot of times these shows are bad because of the way they order their matches. They have no idea. Whoever orders these shows or puts the matches in order, they have no idea how to build a hot show and let the show peak at the end. Right? They don't.
They don't. It was bad. This was just, first of all, the match had no reason to take place to begin with, which is a problem in and of itself. But I'm a fan.
And none of them, even Cena, are even positioned as main eventers at this current time.
No, I mean, I'm a fan of randomness. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy your fucking weird war matches and all that stuff as much as anybody. You know, I love when indie feds throw crazy matches together that make no sense and it's goofy. I find that entertaining. But this wasn't that. This was just like, okay, we've got some guys who aren't doing the other show, because I think they had two shows yesterday. One of them, I think, might have been in Canada or somewhere. And so we have these, you know, we're going to throw whatever four guys are left are going to work this tag match. And Cena is one of them, so it's going to be the main event. Like, it's just dumb. Just fucking dumb. When this match was over, I was really pissed off that I didn't get to see either the fucking Lucha Dragons New Day match or the Cesaro Diego. I was like, I sat through 25, 30 minutes of that shit, and I'm not going to see two matches that are almost assuredly better than that. And two matches that, again, mileage varying on the opener and Valor and Owens, I think all three people on the show would agree that those two matches probably had a chance to be pretty good.
Definitely better than that main event. Because to me, the main event's the only thing that under-delivered.
It just stupid. It's fucking, I'm just fucking annoyed with them.
Yeah, I know, Dylan, but to be fair, not as stupid as TNA in Slammiversary. By the way,
if
you haven't checked that out, check out the reaction show Dylan and I did on Slammiversary.
It's very entertaining.
Yeah, thoroughly entertaining. But Dylan, what do you give the show, man? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle? Where are you at on this?
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle. I can't, you know, like, I, on the one hand, I agree with Johnny's position stated earlier that it was a relatively easy, breezy show to watch despite the 4.5 hour long main event. And you know, it was the show felt quicker. It didn't feel as overproduced as a lot of WWE shows feel. You know, it wasn't a different environment, which at least gave some intrigue to things that wasn't necessarily enamored with. There was no match on the show that I thought was better than good. I'm pretty much lower on every single match on this show than most people, it looks like, which is fine. That happens from time to time. But I would say, I can't go thumbs down because there's nothing bad on the show. Even the main event I didn't think was bad. It was just too fucking long. So I can't call it a thumbs down show, but I can't call it a thumbs up show because I didn't even think it was as good as last week's Raw. You know, and if I'm comparing it to, you know, other specials the WWE has done, which I think is probably the fairest thing to compare it to, would be like the NXT specials, which have a similar time block and they're sort of like have that, you know, the different feel, whatever. I don't think this was anywhere near as good as any of those. So to me, it's a thumbs in the middle show. Not great, not even good, but not bad either. It's okay.
Okay. What about you, Johnny P?
Yeah, I'll meet Dylan halfway. I'm coming from the mild, the upper side, but I'm still going to say Thumbs in the middle overall. I mean, I got what I wanted out of it. And there are a lot of shows that just have nothing on them. And I did enjoy the opener. I enjoyed the Brock squash for what it was. I enjoyed Balor and Owens. Even if, you know, there were some negative critiques to it, or it's almost really saying like, oh, well, this could have been better, but it wasn't horrible either. So, I mean, if you just take away the main event, you know, and you threw on another, if you made that the main event and put something like opened it with maybe Cesaro versus the Matador, then, you know, then there's definite thumbs up potential, most likely. So I'll say thumbs in the middle. And, all right, you know, like I said, it's breezy.
Yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to be the sole thumbs up on this show. I thought the opener delivered. Like I said, I expect the WWE to do stupid booking decisions. So if you want to, if Dylan, if you want to say the thumbs up or thumbs down on the booking, I will agree. Thumbs down on the booking because these people are stupid. But I thought the opener was really fun. I thought that was cool. I thought the women's match over delivered, because it was much more enjoyable than I expected it to be. I like the Brock squash. I know Dylan didn't. So what? You know, we have a difference of opinion on what that was. But I really enjoyed Balor Owens. I thought that match delivered. I thought it was a legitimately great match. And at that point, four out of the five matches on the show delivered for me. So to me, easy thumbs up. Even if I thought the main event, which was okay, well, you know, way too long, but okay, not horrible, even though I wish that wasn't the main event, I'm still going to give the show a thumbs up because of the first four matches. And, you know, I will say this, for a two-hour show, very easy to watch. It makes me miss two-hour Raws because it is so easy to get through a two-hour show. It is. I mean, dude, just even when we do the pay-per-view reaction shows, Dylan, those three-hour shows, a lot of times, man, those are hard to get through. And this was not hard to get through at all, you know.
I thought that was the biggest positive about the show.
Yeah. That's a fair observation. Having said that, I liked four out of the five matches, and you know, whatever. We'll agree to disagree on this one, you know. Maybe we'll see what happens at Battleground in a couple of weeks. Maybe we can all come together and produce our hate. You know, I don't know. We'll see if Johnny Sorrell's on this show. He might enjoy that one. But
speaking of which, Will, breaking news update. Johnny just texted two thumbs up for the show, and if you include yours, that's 3-2. Because Dylan and I only put one each, so 3-2 is a thumbs up show.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it happens sometimes. I agree with Johnny.
Johnny has his toes in an upward position too. I don't know if that's going to count or not. So.
As I say, Johnny is the weirdest hippie I know, because I've never seen a hippie defend a corporation, a blood sucking, lifeless corporation, as much as that hippie. Well, I mean,
I love that man. I love Johnny.
It's the weirdest thing. But having said that, we are definitely going to try and come back tomorrow for the New Japan special. What's the main event for the New Japan show tomorrow, Dylan?
It's AJ Styles defending the IWGP title. AJ Styles, who I think is the best wrestler in the world this year so far, or certainly in the conversation.
Against
Okada, who I am not super high on, but has had some matches I really like this year, including the Bad Luck Fale match at Invasion Attack, which I really liked.
That sucked.
Oh, I like that match.
Yeah.
I thought it was named and destroyed the garbage pail Finn Balor.
Dude,
Kevin Owens match you beat off all over.
You are fucking nuts, dude. That match was horrible. If you like Bad Luck Fale, that's cool. Shows that you like horrible wrestling. You know, don't fucking bother, man. That was a horrible match. It was embarrassing. Fucking, that guy shouldn't even be so fucked.
You know, I will say this.
I like the main event of the show more than I like that fucking shit show of Bad Luck Fale.
You and I will be a very apart on New Japan, because you like all the terrible New Japan wrestlers that people pretend to like.
Oh, like
Dave Meltzer praises them.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not.
No, aren't you a Goto guy? Aren't you one of those guys that think Goto is good?
I thought
Goto
was
boring, stale, lifeless wrestlers of all time.
No problem with Goto. Yeah,
I'm a Goto guy. I'll be on that.
Oh no! Okay. I thought that on that Bad Luck Fale show, the best match of that show was the six man with Nakamura, Goto, Shibata. Who else was in that six man? I don't know. It was a really kick-ass six man.
I like that whole show. I actually really liked Invasion Attack. I thought it was one of the better.
Anyway, what's the name of tomorrow's show?
It's Dominion, I believe.
And who's Nakamura facing?
Nakamura is wrestling the awful Goto. So hopefully he's got his carrying boots on because Goto won't sell.
Hey, Will, we're going to love it. We're going to love it.
You and me, Johnny, we're going to love that match. And Dylan will continue to criticize matches that don't need to be criticized and praise shit like Bad Luck Fale matches, which are absolutely
embarrassing. Hey, I can't help that you hate psychology in wrestling. And you're going full blown Pete on me. I can't help that.
Yeah. I'm not a Young Bucks fan, buddy. You got the wrong guy. Having said that though. I am in the minority on that Bad Luck Fale match. A lot of people liked it, including your buddy Dave Meltzer. So, anyway, let's let everybody enjoy their 4th of July. I hope everybody else enjoyed the podcast today, whether you like the Beast in the East special or not. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.